Good evening and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. Beyond the Darkness is on the air. We've got an interesting show lined up for you this evening. Something that I'm really kind of excited about talking about. You know, you've listened to our show for 12 years. You know our stance on ideas like psychics and healers and mediums. And, you know, where we're open, there's also a good chance that there's some of these things that aren't exactly as they always add up to be. And it's really hard to find somebody that can be objective, go out there and look into this and research it and really kind of flesh these stories out for themselves. And then I was turned on to our next guest. She has a brand new book called Psychics, Healers, and Mediums, A Journalist, A Road Trip, and Voices from the Other Side. Joining us for the evening, Jen Weigel. Do you prefer Jennifer or Jen? What would be best to call you?
Anything is fine. As long as you don't say Jennifer Colleen Weigel, then I'll know I'm in trouble.
We'll see how the interview goes. I can make no promises.
There you go.
Boy, you have been okay, working. I'm originally from the Chicagoland area. I grew up in the Roselle area. Mm-hmm. So I'm familiar, but you've been with CBS, ABC, NBC, WGN, WLS. It's time to hold down a job, Jen.
Just one. Well, I've hopped around to so many of them. I think the only one I haven't been employed by was Fox. So, you know, there's still time, right?
That's right.
I'm still banging the drum. But, no, it's been a really interesting. I had my, quote, traditional journalistic experiences, right? I mean, I started as a traffic reporter and then moved into news and sports. And, I mean, I did everything, news, sports, weather, you name it, I did it, entertainment, and moved from radio to television. And when my father died of a brain tumor, it just sort of rocked my world and in a lot of ways because as a journalist, I was going through this grief that I was having trouble processing, but I was also watching how debilitating it was to be in grief and then also how expensive it was for people who, quote, claim to be a medium or a psychic. You know, I felt as a journalist, I wanted to sort of uncover, you know, take off the lid to some of these people.
Sure.
And I was thinking I was going to expose a lot of them as fraud. That's kind of why I started on this journey, to be quite honest. I thought I was going to create some sort of manual for people not to get ripped off, you know, because I was grieving so much.
Now, prior to your father's passing, did you ever have thoughts of the paranormal, the other side, communicating with ghosts, anything like that?
Well, as a journalist, being in studio for a lot of different radio shows, you know, one of them was Danny Bonaducci, and one of my first experiences was he had the psychic on the radio. You know, every morning radio show or a lot of radio shows will have a, quote, psychic or a medium come on, and most of them are campy and cheesy, and they're kind of mocking the whole process. But for me, the first time I really heard about one was when I was working on the Danny Bonaducci show, and he had this psychic on, and she talked about how one of his relatives passed, and she had very specific things, and this is before Google, I'm dating myself, but very specific messages about how she passed and that she was disoriented and dizzy and fell to her death and that it wasn't suicide. In fact, it was an accident, and that was stuff that wasn't publicized. It was really interesting, and so I thought, well, that's interesting, and then she says to me, oh, you have a grandma. She loves that you wear her rings. And I did have a dead grandma and I did wear her rings, but I thought, you know what? Everybody's got a dead grandma and probably with a ring. So I didn't want to just go, wow, this is real. I was still a skeptic. And I think every interview I do, I still have that skeptical angle to it. I'm open to an experience, but I'm a skeptic at heart, which I think is good because it makes you dig a little bit deeper.
And I respect that. I think people need to be more skeptical and ask more questions before they just blindly follow anything. But was it hard as a journalist? Usually you need to remain objective. You've got the loss of a father, which kind of sends you down this rabbit hole. And then you've got kind of this preconceived notion of, I'm going to expose the fakes and frauds and how much it costs out there and kind of build this how-to book to avoid that. Were you, you know, going into it, do you think you were kind of setting yourself up for, you know, definitely one side of the story over the other, or were you still trying to remain open and objective to the possibilities?
Well, I never thought I was going to write a book about any of this. I was just a daughter who was grieving, and I was going out to gather information, and then it started to hit me as I was going through the process. Wait, maybe I've got enough here for some sort of manual, right? So that was that tier. And then as I was having all of these encounters, I kept being so blown away by the specifics that they knew that I thought, you know what, there's more going on than I can see or hear. And that was my first book, Stay Tuned. So it was a very personal memoir about dealing with my dad's loss, and the grief that went with it. Then comes I'm Spiritual, Damn It, which was my second book, where all these people, I come out with my first book, and it's like the floodgates open, Dave. And
right.
People are suddenly sharing all their stories about, well, I was afraid to talk about this, but, you know, a firefighter is telling me that he gets little whispers in his ear from angels to help save his life when he's out fighting a fire. And, you know, another lady tells me that her little three-year-old is talking to her dead mother. And, you know, I mean, it was just story after story after story. So I just kept compiling all the research. It's suddenly like people are feeling comfortable sharing their woo-woo stories with me, you know, because I came out from, you know, going on this journey. I came out as a journalist, so to speak, going on this journey. And then this book, Psychic Healers and Mediums, I wanted to take some people who are pretty well-known in the community, and maybe some people don't know what this healer, you know, Dr. Judith Orloff does. She's a psychiatrist, but she's also an intuitive. Or there's Carolyn Mace, who's a medical intuitive. Or there's Thomas John, who's a medium. And then there's the psychics. So it's like everybody's got this different job title. And I thought, here, I'm going to go out and I'm going to track down these people who are pretty well known in this world. I'm going to document my experiences. And then I'm going to bring with me a stranger that they can't Google or research ahead of time and document their experience. So it's kind of neat in that regard. I went all over the country to see these people, from Totowa, New Jersey to, you know, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And it was really a wild journey.
If you don't mind, can we reel back to your first book?
Yeah.
As someone, you know, I just lost my mother in November.
I'm so sorry.
For listeners like myself who are still facing the grief process, what were some of the big reveals to you in that first book? What, you know, was there anything that helped you to understand how it worked and why it does what it does? What did you really uncover for yourself?
Well, it's interesting. From the first book also to the current book, so many of the messages are the same and universal, right? And so, for example, in the current book, one of my friends lost her son tragically, and I brought her with on my trip to Minnesota to meet with the Bodine family. And Echo Bodine, who's written 11 books. Have you had her on the show, Dave? You should.
Echo has been a part of our show through the last 11 years on and off. Yeah, she was our resident
fabulous
psychic and on the show every week for a couple of months when she had the time. But yeah, we love Echo. She's great. But
okay.
I'm open to whatever
very
you have
cool
to report to me now. So go ahead.
No, it was really good. It was really good. So I brought my friend to her. And, you know, so for me, the grief was so raw and real when I was first going through it, when I was writing Stay Tuned. And as you can relate to, because it's raw for you, you just want to be able to pick up the phone and call them. You know, you miss their voice. You miss that energy exchange. And it's so hard. Grief is debilitating. And that is one thing that I discovered, is that in my grief, I was actually shutting down from so many messages that were right in front of my face, because I thought they had to come in a certain package, right? For example, James Van Prague, who I'm sure you and many of your listeners are familiar with. In my first book, I have two encounters with him. The first one, you know, my dad's alive and well, and I'm kind of like, oh, what's this guy doing saying he talks to dead people? Interesting. Then my dad dies, and I go hunting for James Van Prague. I want to find him, and I track him down in Lilydale, New York, where, you know, all the spiritualists are, and a lot of psychics and mediums community in upstate New York. And I find him there. And my dad, I was hoping, would come barreling through like, hey, Jen, it's me. I'm proud of you. That's because that's what I'm finding, is that we are really looking for our parents to tell us that they approve of us and that they love us and that they're okay and that they're proud of us. That is what the grief is about. Every single medium I interviewed says the same thing. It's like, you're loved and they love you and they're okay and they're out of pain. Because even if you guys were fighting, you know, if somebody was in a disagreement with a loved one and then they suddenly pass,
right,
I have found in every single interview I've done with people who've either died and lived to talk about it or talk to the people on the other side, there is no judgment over there. They're not. And if there is, then that means the spirit isn't in the light. They're a ghost. They're wandering about. You know, they haven't embraced their death, so to speak. So there is no grieving over there. There's nothing but unconditional love. So there's no scorecard. There's no person standing there with a clipboard talking about what a bully you were in third grade. You know, you have a life review and you view your life and you refeel every emotion that you put out or received. So if you were a real mean person, that could be hell. And if you were a loving person, that would be heaven. So your afterlife experience, I believe, after all of these hundreds of interviews, reflects how you were on earth. So that's what I like to tell people is that, first of all, they're there and they're loving you. They are not judging you. And second of all, they are anxious to communicate with you in whatever way you will let them. You know, whether it's through a sign like somebody bringing up their name out of nowhere or their favorite song coming on the radio right when you're thinking about them. Or I'll give you an example. I was thinking about my dad this morning. And on the morning show news, they showed this clip, and behind the person was a license plate that said PW3445. My dad's initials, Tim Weigel. His birthday was March 4th, 1945. Now, come on. That's pretty good.
It is.
That's an intriguing sign.
But here's where I want to reel back with you then, okay? Looking again at the skeptical side, as you said, you know, the messages always come through. We're looking for this kind of cosmic pat on the back, or, you know, a gentle ethereal hug telling us we're okay, they're proud of us, they love us. See, on the other side, that's not what I seek in the loss of my mother or why I feel grief. My mom and I were very close. And I know how she felt, and that's why I haven't sought to try to communicate with her to this point. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got friends around the world that are mediums and psychics and some of the most well-known names out there. But to me, it just seems like we did what we had to do in life. We said what we had to say, and there wasn't left any messages of, I wonder if she was mad at me. I wonder if she forgives me, or I want that all just that dissipated for me. To me, the grieving process has been this empty hollow, right? This kind of crashing wave of there is no picking up the phone. There is no just laughing or you know, chatting and just doing that. So that was one aspect to me. But then listening to the messages, and I love mediums. I love psychics that do this work because and do it well. Because I've seen, as I'm sure you have doing this, some people have been saved years from laying on a couch talking to a therapist by visiting a medium once. And kind of getting that rounded out closure. But when the message is always, they love you, they're proud of you, they're always around you, doesn't that sound like a stock answer? I mean, it almost sounds like political rhetoric that every politician is going to say this, whether they believe it or not. It's something that's meant to comfort you.
Right. No, it's so true. But for me, I'm looking for more than, they love you and they're sending love. That to me is the absolute stock answer. And I'm like, okay, next. Now what do you got?
Right.
So that's like all right, fine. You said that. Now what? Now impress me. You know, and it's probably a medium's worst nightmare. But I need evidential evidence. Right. And so for me, what I have done now since that first book is I have tried to fill that hole that you're talking about. And boy, do I know that hole. I absolutely know that hole because the energy has been stinted, basically. The plug has been unplugged and you don't feel like you have that exchange anymore. I have now replaced that, what I had with him on this plane, with a different energetic exchange that I have now learned from the likes of Echo Bodine, who teach you how to tap into your intuition. I feel filled up now by, the paranormal. I feel filled up by the knowing that I have a connection to him and to the other side, and that it's an open channel, and that when and if he has something he wants to say to me or wants me to feel that unconditional love, I just open up to it. It's like feeling like you get a warm wave of air. It kind of hits you. And that is what's been different. For me now, it's actually goosebumps. Mm-hmm. I'll get goosebumps in my whole body as a confirmation of a positive answer or, yes, that's what you're supposed to do. Just last night, I was speaking with a colleague after a book signing, and we were, we're toying with this documentary and we're switching some order around of some things. Then it's all about the paranormal. And once we came to this conclusion of, you know what we should do? We should do this with this. I got goosebumps in my whole body. And it was like, yes, it's like my dad was standing behind me, tapping me and saying, that's it. You've got it. So now I think it's about broadening the communication to something that you can find just as fulfilling as talking on the phone used to be with your mom. Because like you said, you guys had an amazing connection and that's fantastic, as did I when my father died. And so it wasn't really like I wanted him. I did want him to say that he's okay, that I got out of the crazy news business because I couldn't stand everything's wrong back to you. You know,
right.
I just hated the awful news business and I wanted to tell different stories. And he knew that when he was sick and dying that I wanted to tell different stories, inspiring stories. And so I've been inspired by opening up my own intuition and finding that we all have this. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from all this work and all these interviews that I've done. We are all intuitive. We just give our power away. We could all talk to dead people if we wanted to work that muscle. I mean, we would have to get quiet. I mean, some of us are more naturally gifted at it than others, right? It's like playing basketball or playing the piano. Some people are really athletic and some people are not. Some people can play Mozart and some people can just play chopsticks. But we can all pick up our fingers and tap on a key or pick up a basketball and throw it at the hoop. So I think that we could really build this muscle if we chose to, but we give up our power to so many other people, we forget we have the tools right inside of us to just open up, tap in, and feel fulfilled.
One thing that I'm always intrigued by, the look for signs, right? And you just mentioned mm-hmm. something. So I just want to push your journalistic integrity to the brink here for me and walk me through this, because I'm curious how everybody's mind works on the delivery of signs. You know, whether it's somebody just brings up a name on the day you're thinking of that person, or you see something, you smell something, and it reminds you of them and it brings them there. You saw something pretty profound, and your message mm-hmm. was pretty cool, to see a license plate that matches your dad's initials and his birth date. How mm-hmm. how do you think, though, that takes place? I mean, how did, you know, if dad is sending you a message, you know, I could understand the, Jen, I love you, whisper in your ear, right?
right, coming
to you in a dream. Uh-huh. Sure, because that's something you can control. How did he mm-hmm. find the car that had his initials and his number, drive it, make sure that it was at this point where a cameraman would turn the camera and catch this on film,
right,
and then broadcast it as you would happen to turn to it? That's where the whole idea of signs gets blown away to me, because it's like, I mean, yeah, that's amazing. That's a really cool nod. But on the other hand, then you got to think, boy, dad was working his ass off this morning just to get this message to me. And what are the odds of it?
Yeah. Right. And that's exactly it. What are the odds of it? And they're working their ass off to show us these signs and signals. And then you know what happens? 9 times out of 10, we're down here going, just a coincidence. And as the mediums all tell me, they're like, how do you think they feel over there? They're so frustrated. They just put in a PhD-sized effort to give you the most unbelievable sign, and you're going, coinky-dink. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what changed my thinking about this, David, it was very profound, actually. I interviewed a doctor, a medical doctor named Dr. Mary Neal, who I'm sure you heard of. She wrote the best-selling book To Heaven and Back. She had a near-death experience. She's an orthopedic surgeon who was in a kayaking accident, and she was without oxygen for 30 minutes, 3-0, okay? So she was coming through Chicago to speak at Evanston Hospital, and she was in the light, the whole deal, and what she was told was that she had to come down and tell her story to anybody who would listen, especially the doctors, because they're so caught up in their scientific minds, they can't embrace miracles. And what she says is that kind of a sign that is orchestrated so completely is proof of miracles or God or source or whatever you want to call it, because it is practically impossible to orchestrate all of that were it not helped by divine intervention. And she says every time you have one of those aha moments where you think, that's weird, I just saw my dad's initials and his birthday on that license plate, you have to instead acknowledge it, write it in a journal, tell it to a friend. It's basically setting off a flare for them to know you're open to receiving the sign, and then they will send so many signs, Dr. Mary told me, that you will not be able to prove it by the law of probabilities in science how often it happens. It will happen so often. And so the day that she told me that, I started taking note of all of the heart-shaped things that I would see. And I mean, I'm not talking just anywhere, like a heart-shaped rock. I'm talking heart-shaped dog vomit and heart-shaped bird poop. Like, everything was heart-shaped. And it got so comical that I just was taking pictures on my iPhone and putting them on Facebook or on Instagram and just sharing them and saying, can you believe I found it? Can you believe this? Can you believe this? And so now it happens so much that I just look up and I say thank you and I smile and I think of Dr. Mary Neal every time, because she says that is source working at its finest. And the only way it will come that quickly and that fast and that often is if you acknowledge it. So I try to give it my thumbs up every time I see it.
You heard it here, folks. Jen Weigel is asking you to make sure that the spirits are listening and drawing vomit-shaped hearts for you.
Hey, it might be something different. It might be a dog poop for you or cat poop.
Thanks.
I'm sorry, but for me, it's about birds and dog vomit. Just so you know.
We all have our wants and needs. Do you ever see, this is the problem I'm grappling with. And I know a lot of people are, because I've heard back from them as I've been open about my loss.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for things, asking for signs, asking for their communication. I mean, it's, you know, mom did her job while she was here. She raised me. She did what she could for me all the way through the end and even beyond. She was there to push me through and help me with things that I didn't even see coming.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for things. I feel almost like, you know, come on, sit up. Who's a pretty girl? Who's a pretty... I don't want to be doing that. I have this weird kind of feeling like that's almost wrong to be asking them of this even in the afterlife. You know, how do you rectify that? Because, I mean, that's something that is... You know, I don't know. Is it just that I'm overridden by guilt in life? I'm not Jewish and I'm not Catholic, so I don't know where that comes from. But the idea is that I feel like I'm asking them to do too much. I don't, you know, and I watch people do this. And maybe that's where my reticence comes up, is I watch people asking daily for these signs. And I kind of think, mom's like, come on, for God's sakes, just let me enjoy the concert up here. We just got another rock and roller, right? And she doesn't want to be worried about shaping dog poop for me so I know that she still loves me. That's where I come in. Do you draw a line in how much do we need to ask from the spirit world? When is enough enough? When is enough that we have the feeling that they're with us and they love us, that we don't need to ask for that all of the time?
Well, I think, yes, absolutely. When you're first stuck with grief, you're asking for signs a lot, because I think people need proof and they aren't quite sure if they believe, right?
Right.
So, but what I have found from these interviews is that they kind of don't want to be tested, you know, like, if you love me, you'll blow out this candle, you know, stop. Of course they love you. So I've broadened it now, instead of like, if you're with me, show me a cardinal, or if you're with me, you know, let me hear someone say your name, or no. Now I've broadened it, and I hope the listeners can get this too, is just, like I said, we give up our power. Like, we don't have the power unless we get the sign. Assume you already have the kryptonite, or rather, you have the spinach, like Popeye. You've eaten the spinach, right? And you don't need any more power. It's already within you. And so you just ask for the guidance to feel it and feel the knowledge. Like I say, show me the next step for my highest good, no matter what it looks like. Help me trust it. Instead of, Dad, if you're there, can you please have Joey call me later? You know, no. It's we get so specific with our demands that we don't realize that perhaps with the bird's eye view that they have, like Dr. Mary Neal had when she was up there in the light, she said it's like this beautiful oriental rug. It's this pattern, and there's light and there's dark, but it makes this gorgeous pattern from way up there. Down here, it feels so personal, like, well, it's me. But trust that their view of what's next for you is better than your view. And so if you just completely trust that you're going to be put in the right place, the right time, with putting forth effort. I'm not saying you can just sit on the couch and trust that everything's going to land in your driveway. You still have to leave the house. You still have to activate things and put things in motion and plant the seeds and nurture your garden and water it and all that. But when it comes to asking for things from your dead relatives, I think that's actually selfish and lazy, to be quite honest. And I was doing it for a good couple of years, just because I didn't really know. I didn't really believe. I wasn't really sure.
Right.
And then so many things happened. And once, like I said, when I met Dr. Mary Neal and I started documenting all of these heart-shaped things, now I don't ask. It just bombards me every day. More proof, more proof, more proof. So I don't have to doubt anymore. Now it's a knowing, and it's become a trust. So at first there was faith, right? You believe in something bigger, but faith turns into a knowing when you've had the ability to sort of trust the process, and that takes a long time. It's not easy to do, but that's where I hope everybody could get to eventually.
Can you define for us, in your opinion, what is the difference between a medium and a psychic? And are they just interchangeable terms, or do they come with their own laws and boundaries?
Oh, well, a psychic wants to tell you what happens next Tuesday, and a medium wants to talk to the other side. And some do both, and some do not. I don't really believe that psychics can tell you what's going to happen in the future, because we have free will. And at any moment, we can take a sharp left turn and go to Tahiti. and blow the whole trajectory. However, I do think that psychics can predict for you things that they energetically feel are your destiny or could be coming up for you. But the timing is always off. And I know so many people that are like, I met a psychic. She said I was going to get married next year. It didn't happen for 2 years. You know, it's like all of these, you know, if the timing is off, then it must not be true. I do believe there are some really talented people out there that can look into your energy and tell you what they're hearing will be your destiny, whether it's a job in 2 weeks or a man in 3 years. But not always are those timings correct. You know, I've witnessed some wonderful mediums where the dead people are telling them to tell you, hey, take that job opportunity that's coming up at the such and such, blah, 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 you know, because they have opinions about things that are coming up for your destiny. So it's really pretty simple. Psychics want to talk about your future. Mediums want to talk to your loved ones on the other side. And then there's also the past life regressionists who just want to tell you what kind of past life you had. You know, I met a woman who is a CEO consultant by day, and she can see dead people and tell you about your past lives on the side. It's quite the combo platter. And I write about her first in Stay Tuned. Her name is Therese Rowley, and she wrote a book called Mapping a New Reality that's pretty awesome. And she just wants to tell you why you have these persistent life challenges. Like if you keep having bosses that don't appreciate you, chances are you have a core lifetime of not appreciating yourself. So you're going to keep encountering all these people that just bring that up for you until you heal it. And when you heal it, then you no longer have to keep dealing with the same lack of appreciation in your workplace. You know, it's pretty fascinating stuff. We are here to learn, and believe it or not, we are challenging ourselves every day with the people that we bring into our lives. I don't think we're victims to our circumstances. I think that they come here to help us grow. And so it's actually divine. As chaotic as some of it might seem, it's actually all to help us learn and grow.
Well, let's discuss that when it comes to healers. Psychics, mm-hmm. Okay, maybe the idea that around us we carry our own version of the Akashic records, past, present, and future, of what our life will entail. Maybe mm-hmm. somebody has the ability to take their telephone cord and plug it into our energy and download some of that information so they can tell us where we've been and what will be coming next. Okay, mm-hmm. The energy works strangely. Sure, let's go with that. Mediums, talking to the dead. We're connected with these people in life, and they've meant something to us, and we have this connection. So, yeah, again, maybe they can plug in their telephone cord, and they're able to pick up the communication we're unable to hear. But when it comes mm-hmm. to the field of healers, where do you stand in the belief that people have the ability, outside of the medical community, of course, we're not talking about, doctors and dentists and podiatrists, but we're talking about healers, that they can actually influence your energy or your malady and fix it. Do you believe that this is something that's real, or is this just a way to separate you from your money?
No, not at all. Of course it's real. I mean, there are some that are good, and then there are some that want to separate you from your money. But the bottom line is even the best healer will say, greater things than this you will do, as Jesus said. We can heal ourselves. We can self-heal. We just have to get out of the idea of dis-ease, right, and discourse and all of this displaced energy that is causing chaos and sickness and illness. Now, I have been to many healers, hundreds of healers, from chiropractors to massage therapists who have the hottest hands. You wouldn't even believe it, right? Some people are Reiki masters. Some people do craniosacral. All of these things our body needs. Our body is a very complicated mechanism. It's a very complicated system. And the more we do to our body to help us heal, if we are emotionally dissatisfied, chances are our body is feeling it too. So we have to get in alignment. We have to be physically in alignment before we can be spiritually in alignment. And if going to somebody that you think is helping your back feel better or your knee feel better, you know, I say go for it, because there are some wonderful people out there that are doing really good work and helping people feel better every day. Some of the doctors in the medical community also have, I've met with a lot of MDs who are also Ayurvedic healers, and they believe that by, you know, eating your biggest meal from 10 to 2 and getting to bed by 10 and, you know, all these, you know, traditional sort of systems to make you, feel really, really good are very helpful. You cannot go about your day and run on fumes and put no gas in your tank and expect to be amazing. You have to take care of yourself. So I have found different practitioners that have been more helpful than others. You know, when my dad was fighting brain cancer, he went to a Tai Chi guy, but he also had some energy work done. I mean, this guy was doing Reiki and all sorts of different kind of energy work on my dad's brain when they gave up and didn't want to give him any more chemo or radiation. And his tumor shrunk 70%. And the doctors at Northwestern couldn't explain it. I mean, it was just like, wow, what's going on? Well, it's called energy work. And so for people to poo-poo it, it's been going on for thousands of years. We are so slow to get to the bandwagon on this in this Western civilization. People in the East have been dealing with acupuncture and helping align our chakras and all of our energy bodies for the longest time. I mean, reflexology, even when you get a foot massage, if somebody pushes on a point on your foot, it's like they pushed on this one spot that I guess triggers your liver. And I was doing this cleanse where I was, trying to take all the toxins out of my body and, no sugar, no bread, no cheese, no booze, the no fun diet, basically.
Right.
And he pushes on the spot of my foot that's supposed to be my liver. And it was like, ow, I mean, it hurts so much. And that is the spot, according to Chinese medicine, that is your liver. And it's just fascinating stuff. So I think we have to be open to the possibility that some people have incredible healing abilities. Echo Bodine is one of them. At the age of 17, her hands got hot and she was told by this psychic that she was going to go home and heal her father's migraine. And she was like, what? I just want to go to the dance at school. Like, what's going on here? So she went home. Her dad had a migraine. She was told to put her hands on her dad's head, and she did just that. And by gosh, his migraine went away. And he goes, I don't know what the heck you did, but that was great. Thanks. He gets up and he goes about his night. And that encounter alone changed her life. And now she's an incredible hands-on healer, and she does remote healing too. So I do think some people, I've experienced it myself, some people are amazing. And then other people I've heard amazing things about, I go and I sit down and I feel nothing. So I think it's varied. And like in any profession, whether you're a mechanic or an accountant or, who knows, right? A doctor, you can have good ones and you can have really bad ones. So you just have to search and try to find the practitioner that, works with your chemistry and your needs.
I think where the problem is for me, and boy, I know I'm going to get some hate mail on this. But I'm going to be honest with you, right? If you were going to go, and I kind of brought this up a week or so ago with Tim when we were talking about a news story. If you were going to go get your teeth fixed, would you feel comfortable sitting in front of a dentist with jacked up teeth or an orthodontist?
Right.
If you were going to go get hair plugs, would you sit in front of a guy with really bad hair plugs and feel comfortable about that? I think where my issue comes is... in the healing modalities, the idea that we can do these things, a lot of the people I've met through the field that are healers, quote-unquote healers, are dealing with alcoholism, drug abuse, diabetes, morbid obesity. And it makes me sit back and go, if you're so talented at what you do, why are you so messed up?
Well, I think it's like you've met a lot of psychics that can't predict for themselves, right?
Right.
The mediums, they can't read themselves. They can't read their families. I think some people are just brought here to be the vehicle, to be the channel for it, and to bring the source light through their hands. But no, I don't think if somebody is a practicing addict and a user of alcohol and drugs that they can heal anybody. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. But that's where I was going with this is I think that's why most of the world – here in the West, why we are standoffish to the idea, because a lot of the practitioners and the people that claim to have these abilities seem so messed up. You would think if you were a conduit of health and you were God or Source, the universe, Ronald McDonald, whoever's giving you your abilities would make you shine as a beacon. You would be the one, you would look like an Adonis as a man or some Greek goddess and have this ability, because it would seem like, do you know where I'm going with this? I mean, unfortunately, it's because
I think my experience has been a little different. Yeah, no, I haven't experienced the guy that's trying to get you off sugar that's a diabetic or, but in my experience, a lot of the healers and the psychics and the mediums, they did have a bout with like alcoholic, tendencies and stuff.
Right.
But like the Bodines, they're all in AA now. and they're sober, and they've been sober for decades. So I think they got that out of their system. I think a lot of people struggle when they have these gifts because they're trying to mute them. And so they start partying to dull the voices and dull the gifts and all that stuff. And hopefully they come out of it. But, you know, yeah, I'm with you. If I were experiencing some guy that was telling me that they're going to heal me and then they're, you know, they're limping away with their arthritis, I would think twice. But I have yet to experience those kinds of healers. The healers that I've encountered are pretty tuned in with their body, and they want their container, so to speak, to be at as high vibration as possible.
That's an important life lesson for our listeners. And again, I know I've got friends that are healers that are fitting into these categories that will be upset with that. But I think it's an important thing that maybe they need to hear as well. If you want your business and you want to be perceived in a certain way, you need to present in a certain way. And, you know, I think that is why a lot of people do feel hesitant about seeking quote-unquote healers because of this. We need to take a quick break. Our guest this evening, Jen Weigel, will continue talking about her experiences, her work, her books, and talk a little bit more in depth about some of the cases, some of the different mediums and psychics she's met, what's really had a profound influence on her from doing this. And we'll do that when we return to Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
All right, we're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, bringing you the best in paranormal talk radio 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. You can tune in here and continue to check out the show. Now, remember, next Tuesday, it starts True Crime Tuesday. Make sure you go to podcastone.com and subscribe, or go to iTunes and subscribe for True Crime Tuesday. You guys wanted it. You demanded it. We brought it back. True Crime Tuesday begins next week, the 25th. So make sure you've got that taken care of and you never miss another minute of True Crime when we host those shows. And we've got some great guests lined up, a lot of fun stuff, and we're collecting more Florida Man stories. So continue to email me your dumb crimes and stupid criminals. We'll cover those as well. You can email me Dave@darknessradio.com. Dave@darknessradio.com, and we'll continue on. All right, today, Jennifer Weigel, our guest, psychics, healers, and mediums, a journalist, a road trip, and voices from the other side. Jen, it's so fascinating talking to you. I love this, and hopefully we'll get a chance to meet when I'm in Chicago later this year at Ursula Bielski's conference I'm going to be a part of. We'll have to see if we can get you.
Yes, when's the conference?
I believe it's right at the beginning of October. I'll have to look. But for our listeners, check out darknessevents.com and scroll down. You'll see the big banner. There's a lot of people that are going to be out at this conference this year, and we're going to have a great time. We always do. But we'll have to get you, Jen. I mean, you're right there in the neighborhood. We should get you in there and do a book signing. I'll talk to Ursula and see if we can get this happening.
Please do. I would love it. It sounds like I'd be with my tribe.
Yes. Once you're with your people. Lots of drinking and fun, too. Just fair warning.
Fabulous.
Let's continue talking about this. As you're doing this journey, talking to these different mediums and seeking the truth, whatever the truth is, right? I mean, in some cases, finding out if people are charlatans or are they truly gifted spiritual people that have the ability to communicate with the dead. You mentioned earlier, you know, and brought up a Bible verse. Are you religious in nature? Did you come from a religious background?
I was raised Christian. It depended who my dad was married to at the time, but we started off at Lutheran. And then we moved to Episcopalian, and then by the third wife, we were just congregational, you know, going twice a year for Easter and Christmas Eve.
Sure.
And but I was confirmed and baptized and all of that, but I was always baffled by how do they know? You know, I mean, I know from gathering facts as a journalist today, it can still be hard to get the facts right. So what did they do a couple thousand years ago when they had no audio recordings, no written recordings? It was all chiseled onto templates or told from person to person. And I know how a story from Thanksgiving gets messed up just between my aunt and the rest of the family.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was always asking my dad and my mom and everybody, like, how do they know? Well, how do they know this is what Jesus said? Well, they just know. Well, how? You know, I mean, it was just, well, the stories were passed down. Well, how do you know they didn't change the stories? And so I always had this inquisitive spirit about it. I was always faithful in the belief that I knew there was something bigger, but I didn't like a lot of the people at church who were judgmental and mean and awful Monday through Saturday. And then they'd apologize for it on Sunday, and it was like it was all okay. So I was confused by religion. And so then I just rejected it altogether in my 20s and most of my 30s. And then, but when my father passed away, I decided to start embracing something. It's kind of like my own religion, so to speak. I think that there are so many wonderful things in many religions that are organized religions, but the organization often ruins the message. And that is why I'm always interested in talking to people in the faith-based community. I had a great conversation with a Lutheran minister who told me all the parts of the Bible about embracing your intuition, you know, and the gifts of the Spirit. It's Corinthians, you know, it's all about the gifts that we have as individuals and empowering us to use those gifts instead of putting all of our power in God or Jesus or outside of ourselves. I think that's the biggest disconnect in a lot of today's Christian teachings. And then I had a Roman Catholic priest who told me, you know, that a lot of parts of the Bible are indeed looking into this, and that it's the part where they talk about gypsies and seers and people using that above their faith in God. That's when it's taken in a bad way. That's when it's looked down upon, supposedly, by, you know, those, by God, by Jesus, whatever. You never should put anything like this above your connection to God or Source. And so I think people mix that up. They think of that one part in Jesus, you know, they're talking about the gypsies and the seers versus a medium that is calling in information from Saul or Samuel, which are, according to this Roman Catholic priest, it's happening a lot in the Old Testament. So I found that fascinating. I'd like to tell people that I'm Roman Catholic priest certified.
You become a Roman Catholic priest by association now? Is that the whole deal?
No, meaning like he agrees with my researching into this, because I tell him I get a lot of flack from people in the religious community that tell me I'm going straight to hell for even having these conversations.
Right.
And I say, well, you're obviously not educated in the actual Bible. You're reading the five verses that your priest told you to read, and shame on you. Get, you know, versed and do your research. People who don't do their research, they just take the five sound bites that they're told are truth. I don't have a lot of respect for. I want people who do their digging and do their homework, and then we can have a conversation.
Right. And that is, you know, I know when we started the show, it was a lot of, oh, that's the devil's work. Oh, what they're doing is of the, and I always thought, well, then why are we getting such great messages of love and light, compassion, empathy?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, again, if you look at the Bible will tell you that when Satan returns, it's going to be as a being of light and love and trying to lead the way. That is what his role will be. So look at what a good trickster he is. You know, he's tricking us with love and compassion. Boy, that devil, you just can't trust that guy, right?
Now,
have you had a chance when you're doing this work to encounter people that you do consider to be frauds in the field?
You know, I had a very recent experience with someone that people raved about and have told me they've had a really good experience with. And I sat down with him for an hour and got nothing back. I mean, nothing seemed to be hitting. And so I know people have bad days. And but I've also seen and heard that some psychics actually can lose the gift if their ego takes center stage.
Right.
So if they start making it about themselves and they're all obsessed with being on TV or, you know, getting a best-selling book or whatever, you're forgetting the message that you're a healer for Source, that you are a messenger for the other side. It's not about you. You're conveying messages to help heal the world. And when people start to get out of that and think they are master or they are this or they are that, and they're caught up in their title and their entitlement, I mean, I'm always blown away by when I interviewed Dr. Wayne Dyer, right? I love Wayne Dyer, and he was amazing, and we lost him way too soon.
Right.
But his handlers were like, you must call him doctor. And I'm like, okay, well, he's not a medical doctor. He's a PhD. I'm not saying that that's any less important. I'm just saying that's, but he also talks about how we are all one and we're all spirit, and that ego is edging God out. So if edging God out is what ego is, then why do we have to, you know? So I actually went, like, asked him that in the air. And he was like, I don't care if you call me doctor. And his handler was so mad at me for asking that. But it's like, look, we all put on our pants one leg at a time, okay? And whether you're the janitor or the CEO, you are important. And that is what I think is we need to remember that. So whenever anybody in this field thinks that they are above the others, because of their, quote, body of work, I just roll my eyes. I mean, I can't stand that. It really bugs me. And I have seen it a lot in my years.
I have as well. You know, in some cases, I understand it. It's when those people that have been around doing this for so long are really proficient at what they do, and then they're continually questioned and browbeaten about it. I can understand kind of the ego rising at that point, because at some point you got to be like, what do I, you know, I've watched Michael Perry, a good friend of ours, who has done some of the most remarkable readings I've ever seen. And then people will immediately ask afterwards something totally degrading and making it sound like they think he's faking it. And he's like, how could I have faked that? I don't know who these people are. And I love those moments, because I love the theories people have as to how it happened. We did this big reading with Michael and Marty Perry at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. And they did this gallery for, I think it was around 150 people. And most of them were walk-ups that day that bought tickets at the door. And that's an important part of the story, because then they go in, they do this reading. And afterwards, this woman comes out to me and she's shaking her head. She goes, wow, that was pretty impressive, pretty impressive. And I go, oh, really? I'm glad you enjoyed it. She goes, yeah. She goes, I'm still trying to figure out how they do it. I thought maybe what they did was probably looked each one of us up online so they knew enough about us. And she goes through this whole rhetoric. Then I go, wait a minute. So the idea that they could maybe be talking to the dead, that's too hard for you to believe. But the fact that they looked each one of you up on MySpace and Facebook, memorized your backstories, who's died, who's alive, who just graduated, who's having a baby, and then they were able to call upon that. That, to me, is more impressive than them talking to the dead. If they've got that kind of memory and capability, they are truly Superman.
So I have this happen to me all the time. And the first time, it really kind of blew me away. I had the Manhattan medium, Thomas John. We do this event here in Chicago called Conversations with Weigel. And we were introduced by our publisher. And my publisher was like, have I got a medium for you? And I'm like, if I hear that another time, I'll be a millionaire if I got a nickel for every time I heard that. So I interview Thomas, and he brings up so many completely specific things. Again, it's like, Joey says that when you put that one thing in the pocket before you buried him, I mean, it was like really specific things, not we have a man here sending you love from the other side. It is an absolute, Chi-Chi, the Chihuahua, and, you know, and her collar that was pink and the this and the that. So it's open seating in the Wilmette Theater. There is no assigned seat. And he closes his eyes, but he points directly, third row, two ladies in, you got married in Ohio. You know, Kim is here, blah, 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 blah. And people are gasping, right? So after, and of course, you know, had I not experienced him giving me information that you could not possibly Google, I mean, I write about this in my new book, he literally says to me, did you just kill a real estate deal like today? And right before I walked in to meet with Thomas, I had killed the sale of my house. I mean, and I said to myself, if he brings that up, then I'll know he's good. So he said, your dad is saying, don't do business with those people. Do not do business with those people. So that was like, whoa. So then here we are at the Wilmette Theater. All these people are getting called out with the most unbelievable specific things. And so people are accusing me. They're writing me emails saying, wow, good job memorizing where everybody was sitting. Just like you said, going on our Facebook, you must have seen the obituary that was written 17 years ago about my mom, the piano player, you know, and it's like, oh, yes, because you are so important that we're going to do that for 140 individuals and then just hope that we get it right with the lady with brown hair happens to be the one from Ohio. You know, I mean, there's no way in hell. I said, I got news for you. Before the show, he was having a glass of Pinot Grigio in the green room. Okay, he wasn't Googling anybody. And I get that a lot. Thomas John and I went to Europe. We were in Ireland. And he got emails from people that said, well, I understand why you do the interview in the beginning, because you're obviously giving Thomas a chance to scan the audience so that he can match the faces with all the people that he has researched and investigated. And it's like, again, an open seating for 150 people, and that's the only reason we do an interview, is so that Thomas can scan the audience and hope to find a familiar face. And then, you know, it's just amazing what people will come up with, because their face is so... It can't hold the container. It can't hold the vibration of believing that someone could actually talk to the dead.
Let's talk about that. I mean, you had this profound loss in your life. You've gone this journey. You've been in and out of religion in different aspects and ways. Has this changed your belief system? Do you believe in a God now because of these connections and these spiritual messages that come through?
Well, I believe, I think over time there have been, 3,000 gods, right? If you want to take into account every single religion and every faith and every, So, yeah, there's gods. I think there's source. There's souls. I think we all have souls. I think we have this shell of a body that once we leave it, we don't just disappear. I think we go on. I think the soul lives on. The energy of the soul lives on. And it continues in different dimensions. I mean, we're using 6% of our brain on a good day. So the other 94% is doing something pretty phenomenal. And I think that it's having a great time in other dimensions and God knows other, quote, lifetimes, so that we can learn and expand our consciousness and keep evolving. It's when we don't evolve and when we just keep repeating the same patterns and making the same mistakes that I think our guides or God or whatever you want to call it gets frustrated, but even in a compassionate way. It's not like in a judgmental way. It's like, oh, look at them being humans again. They'll have to come back and learn it again. You know, they'll have to come back to school in the next lifetime and see if they can overcome this challenge. So, yes, my belief system has completely flip-flopped in the last 15 years to knowing that there's something bigger going on. And also knowing, like I said earlier, we have intuition. All of us have it. Now, I can't see someone's, like, we were in Wisconsin Dells. Thomas John and I were doing a show there, and we had these headsets on for microphones. And the guy came up to us afterwards because Thomas picked out this woman in the second row who had a prized, show cow that was dead and was coming through. And, yeah, I know you're sad about it, but don't worry. She wants you to, basically not be grieving her loss. She's okay. She's with the other show cows. And, I mean, it was like everybody was laughing and kind of gasping because he came up with such specifics about this dead cow. And he's like, I don't usually get animals, but this one's pretty, this one's pretty in my face. I've got to acknowledge this cow. And so afterwards, the guy came up to us and he said, so tell me what, they're whispering all the information into your headpiece then, I guess. So he thought that our microphones were actually, earbuds, and somebody was back doing research based on that person's name and Googling them and then channeling that information via microphone into Thomas's ear and into my ear and saying to me, okay, third row, second person from the left, go to her, that kind of thing. And that's what they literally thought we were doing. So,
you have religion to thank for that. It wasn't Benny Hinn, but who was that?
Randy busted the fraud.
Amazing Randy busted him, but the guy's still doing that, and he was getting information fed through his ear, and they were able to actually, I believe they tapped and messed up the audio feed so he couldn't hear, and suddenly his powers from God vanished. So I think that that's where, and it's been on TV countless times, so people, have got that preconceived notion. So that I at least understand, but it's the outrageous and outlandish ways people will try to push it away. And why did you come in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Vehement in not believing that this is what's going to be going on, and, the openness of it, it's fascinating. You have immersed yourself in this field. You've spoken to so many experts. You've got your own podcast on Spiritual Damn It, which can be, it's part of the WGN Plus network, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So people can find you there. And have you begun to develop your own abilities? Do you speak to the dead now? Do you hear them?
It's funny. I got an email from a lady that said, Jen, can you please come to my book club and give all of us psychic readings? And I'm like, whoa, lady, I haven't gotten there yet. I mean, I am actively every single day trying to build up that muscle that we call intuition, as I was saying earlier, because I do believe that we all have it. My son is wickedly intuitive. I mean, he's 10 going on 11. He's been able to see my dad, who died 5 years before he was born, on a very frequent basis. So I'll say this, selfishly, I wanted to get as much research as I could on these people because I was trying to understand how my son was wired. Because I know what I was seeing every single day when he's telling me things that grandpa says this and grandpa says that. And there are all these specific messages that he has never been told by me or anyone in the family that he's getting straight from grandpa's mouth, which is scary. It was very scary for me. It was very scary for my ex-husband. And now it's become very, very common. I'm just he doesn't talk about it very often because he doesn't talk about it at school. It's not exactly something that's going to come up at, you know, dodgeball.
Right.
But you know, he also can sit in the back seat and I'll be thinking, I should go to the store. Thinking, I should go to the store. And he will say, Mom, let's not go to the store now. Let's go later. And I'm like, you get out of my head. But that just goes to show you our thoughts have energy and power, and that we all could hear each other's thoughts if we just quieted our mind enough to do so. You know, my kid is an open book right now, and I'm sure as he gets older, these gifts will get quiet because that's what people do. We all have it. I had it so big time as a little kid, little bitty kid, 4 and 5, and I would get these stomach aches with nice people or mean people. And then my mom took me to the doctor, and the doctor said I was just making it up for attention. So I shut it down because I didn't want to be judged. And I think that's what's happening with a lot of kids out there. They're shutting it down because they don't want the judgment. So, yeah, I definitely have changed my perspective on that, but mainly because I have, you know, my son that I'm trying to encourage and not make him feel weird for having such a heightened sense of intuition.
But now when he's in bed and you turn on Magic Mike, do you have to wrap your head in aluminum foil to make sure he's not picking up on your thoughts? Mom, knock it off. I'm trying to go to bed.
Yeah, you know what? He was trying to sleep and he says, Mom, there's a ghost in my room. And I'm like, oh, good grief. Well, I don't see it, so go to bed. And he's like, can we FaceTime Echo? I need to know what to do because, you know, Echo Bodine and Michael Bodine are Ghostbusters.
Right.
And he knows them now because they've come here to do shows and we've done events with them. And, you know, he's like, can I just FaceTime Echo real quick? And, you know, it's just so weird. Like, I don't know that anybody has this kind of conversation. But yeah, no, I definitely freak out sometimes at the worry that my son is picking up on thoughts I hope he's not picking up on from my concern. And, you know, oh, gosh, good grief. I can't wait till he's a teenager.
Well, do me a favor, please. Encourage him as much as you can because he will save his life a lot of heartache and hardship if he learns to tune into people and can avoid the negativity and the insanity that could be brought into his world. So if he's already he's already picking up on your mind and thoughts now, boy, would that be a talent I wish all of us had.
No kidding. I said to him once, he was talking about something that my dad was saying, and it was a memory, you know, like a specific memory from a specific Christmas and a party that my grandmother was hosting. And, you know, I just got all nostalgic thinking about it. And he said, well, what's the matter, Mom? And I started crying. I said, well, I'm just sad because I can't hear Grandpa like you can. And it makes me sad. And he goes, Mom, he talks to you all the time. You just don't listen. I was like, oh, no, you didn't.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that's the big message is that we are all getting those whispers, but we are so busy with our own thoughts and we cloud. You know, we just have too much white noise going on, literally, with all the extracurricular things that are going on in our heads and all the doubts and all the negativity. And it just comes from our lives. I mean, for the longest time, I shut down the alerts on my phone so I didn't have those news alerts of everything's wrong back to you.
Right.
And it was really peaceful. I have to say, it was quite lovely. And just this morning, I did an interview with a cast from that show, Naked and Afraid.
Right. Right.
Right. And they were talking about the coolest part about being out, you know, in the woods for 40 days was having no phone and no electronics and being, you know, yeah, they were scared. Yes, they had to eat tarantulas. Yes, they were naked and outside. But the cool part was unplugging from everything. They all said that their intuition got so heightened because they didn't have anything to dull it.
That's a great insight. Yeah. And it does make you wonder. Here we are in the most connected time in history where you can think a thought in Chicago, Illinois, and send it around the world to Australia in the blink of an eye, yet we're more unplugged from one another in a human way.
Completely. Completely. And that's the way every psychic and medium works. People will say, well, how can they do that, you know, over the phone? So people will say, I have to meet them in person. I can't imagine they work over the phone. Well, how do you think it works when somebody's on stage talking to a dead loved one on the other side? You know, that's a long-distance call. So you don't have to be in front of somebody to make it work. I just think it's possible to do from anywhere, anytime.
Have you seen spirits?
No, never. But you know what? I do Reiki. I'm a Reiki master, and I got certified in that in 1999, so it's been a while. and I only had used it on people I know who were fighting cancer, and I would rub their feet. And for me, when I know it's working, my hands start to tingle, and it just kind of works like that. My hands get hot, they start to tingle. But what's been happening to me lately, and I'll share this story with you real quick, I've been seeing pictures, like a little movie plays out in my head. So I'll close my eyes, I'll put my hands on the patient, they're on the table, and I'm just kind of listening where to go, you know, shoulder blade, right hip, feet, whatever. And I go where I'm guided. And so this one lady, I was working on her right hip the whole time. I'm like, geez, this is, I said, I'm sorry, I barely know you and I've got my hands on your butt, but you know, I'm just hearing I need to work this spot. And she's like, that's funny because it's really sore. So thank you. I don't know what's happened to my hip. So as I'm on her hip, I kept seeing this picture of a man, looked older. I don't know who the guy was. And I said, is your father passed away? You know, here I am fishing. You know, do you have a dead dad?
Right.
She's like, yes, actually he is. And I said, okay. And then I saw a little red blanket. It was like rectangle shaped. It was the weirdest thing. It looked like a red, like, dish rag. And I'm like, I'm not going to bring that up. That's just too stupid. So I just kept my mouth shut. And then I saw it again. And then I saw it a third time. Okay, I'm like, all right, three time is like an anvil over the head. So I said to her, I don't know why, but he's showing me this little red, like, rag. It looks like a dish rag or a tiny blanket. And she just gasped, and she starts crying. And I'm like, what is it? She said her father was a Lutheran minister. He died in his 80s. But when he was 8 years old, his mother died. And so he made a blanket out of one of her red dresses. And it was his favorite thing that he kept in all of his, like a handkerchief in his pocket. And people would walk into him in his office and he would have it up to his nose, like he was just sniffing it for oxygen, you know?
Sure.
They buried him. They buried this man with this red blanket. And that is what he was showing me as evidence that he was with her. And I was like goosebumps and she's crying. And I'm like, oh God, now what does this mean? So I haven't seen dead people, so to speak. But when I do Reiki on people, I do get images. And this is a very new party trick for me, Dave. I'll be honest. It's not like I know what I'm doing. I just honor the images that come.
Right.
And I speak them and hope that they bring some sort of healing. Because otherwise, why the heck are they showing it to me? You know what I mean? But again, and I'm a journalist. And I don't claim to be a healer or a medium or a psychic. But this is something that I consciously have been able to tap into with the willingness where I literally work on these people and I say, help me give them the messages that will help them heal the most, whatever that is. And sometimes it's complete silence and sometimes it's a little red blanket. So there you go.
That's great. You know, funny story, one of the first times I met Chris Fleming, the mm-hmm. medium and psychic from Illinois, we were in a... We were at a conference in Las Vegas, and we were doing this large kind of seance-y thing. But it was basically like a group gallery reading, but we were all sitting in a big circle. And then there were so many people, we had to sit in another circle outside of the circle. So there are these two circles encircling him. And he's doing this deal, and he starts off and he goes, I've got this man, and he looks to be like I can't tell from the motion. It's either a golf pro or a tennis pro. And he has this mm-hmm. house, and it's an A-frame house. And I see the front is all glass. It's all glass. And he's a golf or tennis pro. No, nobody. He's showing me this large, I can't tell if it's a duck or a goose, but it's this, it looks like a big white duck. And it's not a wild duck. It's a pet that he got for this person, and nobody's making a peep. And I'm watching the flop sweat, and I'm sitting there going, oh, psychics and mediums Uh-oh. Are such a joke. This is, right. I like this guy, but man, this is an epic flop. And we sat there and I watched him, and he gave like 6 or 7 points, major points.
Uh-huh.
Nobody says anything. Finally, he goes, well, then he gives this kind of weird stock answer. Well, we're in a huge hotel filled with people and a casino. You know, maybe I'm picking up on somebody else's story from out there. And you could hear this collective eye roll right throughout the room.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, all right, I'm sorry, your person's not here. I have to move on. I have to try to connect with somebody else. And he starts kind of talking a little bit about the psychic world as he's trying to reprep himself. And you can see he's really uncomfortable because nobody laid claim to this. And then this woman, two over from me in this outer circle, she leans over to her friend. She goes, well, that was kind of weird. She goes, I had an uncle who was a tennis pro that had this big A-frame house with a glass front. And for my 8th birthday, he gave me my own duck, and it was this big white duck. But I don't know if that message was for me.
Oh, I see that all the time.
Right. And I looked at her, and I go, out loud, I go, what did you just say? And Chris goes, what's the problem over there? And I go, hold on a second, Chris. I go, what did you just say? And she just looks like her head's going to explode. And she's like, nothing. I go, no, you said something. I said, this poor bastard has been up here sweating for 15 minutes. Tell him what you just said to me. And she goes, well, I had an uncle who was a tennis pro, and he had a big house with a glass front, and he gave me a duck. And Chris just looks at her, and he goes, okay. He says, hi. And then he moves on, and we all burst out laughing. It was awesome. But I just sat there. I was like, how specific do you need to get before you will own up to this thing? And
well, that's so funny. I've seen that so many times, too. I mean, we probably both have like a whole book full of those witnessing moments where people are wanting just one more morsel. That literally in Ireland, Thomas John was saying, I keep seeing this bottle hitting someone in the face, and there's a scar over the eye. And I'm looking for a woman, a young woman, where this happened. And, you know, he kept pointing to this row, two rows in front of me, and nobody was copping to it. And then finally he's like, all right, I'm moving on. And he moved on. And the same thing, the woman whispered over, she's like, when I was 6, I was hit by a bottle and I got this terrible scar over my eye. See, you can still see part of it, da, da, da. But he didn't say the name, so I don't know if it was for me. And you're like, okay, wait a second. And, you know, they need more. They got to test it a little more. I don't know.
Well,
it makes you so frustrated.
I learned when we started doing our live events, and we were working with this one medium at these events, she would start to tap in. And let's face it, in some cases, there is a lot of generalities, right? We all know somebody with a
generation.
So I said, if any of this makes sense, whether you think the message is for you yet or not, stand up. So, and then what I'd get is I'd get everybody stand up, and as she's connecting and it doesn't make sense, sit down. She started doing it, and the crowd would slowly weed itself out, and then you'd get down to three people. And I was amazed, and I'd be like, are you kidding me? Three people have this many things in common with the exact type of deal. And I'd be like, okay, is there a possibility that there are three spirits here all named John who lived in a pink truck and used to eat ice cream sandwiches for breakfast? You know, could it be? And she's like, no, there's only one here. I'm only seeing one. Mm-hmm. And his face isn't morphing and changing. It's only one. And I go, well, what does his face look like? And she'd go, well, I'm getting like dark hair. And then one person would sit down. And I'm getting these striking blue eyes, and the second person sits down, and then we lock in. And I thought, what a funny process of psychic elimination we just had to do with 100 people in this room to get down to who it was, because there are so many similarities. And sometimes you're embarrassed, because what if the message isn't for me? What if it's for the person behind me? And I'm trying to push that, my agenda into the story. So I can understand some of the reticence, and then there's what they call psychic amnesia, right? Where you're so blown away that you're forgetting the important things that they're telling you. And you're like, no, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand that. And it's exactly what your story was. And then once all of a sudden your mind clears from being the one picked on in class, and then you realize, oh my God, wait, no, that was exactly my Uncle Bill. And you know, it's just funny the way that works.
When I was at a recent event with Rebecca Rosen, who's out of Denver, have you heard of Rebecca?
I have not.
Okay, she's great. She's written a couple of best-selling books, Spirited. The latest is What the Dead Have Taught Me About Living Well. And she was 19 when her gift hit. She was minding her own business, a sophomore in college, kind of fighting through depression. She started journaling, and she would hear the voice of her dead grandmother come through, and her grandmother committed suicide, and actually, unfortunately, her father found his own mother.
Oh.
So she went to her dad and said, hey, guess what? Nana came to me, and this is what she said, and she told me to tell you three things, blah, blah, and blah. And I guess there were three very specific things that the dad hadn't shared with anyone that only he knew from finding his mom dead. And so he looked at her and said, whatever it is that you're doing, keep doing it. So she's been embracing it ever since. So 20 years later now, she's kind of like, you know, a mom of... She's got three kids of her own and then two stepkids. So it's like the Brady Bunch out in Denver. And she's very sweet. She had a show on Lifetime for a while, but she's like the medium next door. You know, she's very, and at all of her events, she says there are these parallels where there will be four parents who have sons who drowned, and they were all teenagers, right. And it's no accident. It's like they're coming in because they want all those parents to know each other. They want them to have a grieving support system. They want them to know that they're up there hanging out. And then, of course, you know, she'll give then specific messages to each one of those parents. But the irony that there are four sets of parents who have teenagers who drown the exact same way, and then you go over here and you have two sets of Robert and Richard brothers that are dead, right. You know, and it's just like, whoa. And she says that's all orchestrated. Again, it goes to that weird, that strange thing. Like, what a coincidence. But they are working so hard up there to orchestrate this dance that they hope we acknowledge and say, hey, thanks, that was a good one. I got it, you know. So that's the test, is if we can just wink and nod and say, all right, I hear you. Thanks. I'll keep looking for the heart shape.
Help our listeners out as we're wrapping up here. And you've been such a delight. I'd love to have you back, Jen, in the future. But
oh, anytime.
For our listeners that are seeking to get through this grieving process and make a connection, give me three tips to find somebody that really is good. And not necessarily asking you to name Echo Bodine and Miss Rosen, or, you know, but what should they be looking for in a reader that would make sense for them?
Well, you know, it's so interesting. People, I've become like the Angie's List for these people, and I'm sure you are as well, too, right?
Right.
Because they have different skill sets. You know, some people really just want to know, am I going to get a job this year? Am I going to move? You know, it's really simple. It's stuff like that. Whereas other people are just like wanting to know that their dead loved ones are okay, and how are we best going to be able to communicate? And tell me you were there for the wedding because I didn't get to have you there physically because you died of cancer. And so, you know, do your research. Don't take somebody's word as gold. For example, this gentleman I was talking about that I sat down with just recently for an hour, I had three people tell me what an amazing medium he was, and it was a complete miss for me. And that was just odd. But for them, it was really, really good. So just because somebody's good for somebody else doesn't mean they're going to be good for you. So I tell people, just know what you're looking for. Are you stuck and wondering why you're stuck and feeling like a victim? Well, then you probably need to go to somebody like Therese Rowley, who specializes in past lives, to find out why you keep having these patterns that repeat over and over again. If you're just feeling down because you lost a child or you lost a parent, then I would go to a reputable medium that just specializes in talking to the other side. And you can tell by going to their website and seeking it out and seeing what they say that they do. And then the psychics, exactly, you know, here's the thing. If you keep asking every 6 months, am I going to get a boyfriend? Am I going to get a job? Chances are your self-esteem is low and you need to make some life changes to get yourself on track. And a psychic is not going to be able to help you. A lot of these psychics tell me that they have to tell people not to call them more than twice a year because they can't go to the grocery store without calling the damn psychic. So listen to your own intuition also, because believe it or not, that's going to tune in even better for you the more you use it. So the more we can empower ourselves, we won't need to go to psychics and mediums. We'll just do it for entertainment purposes at that point, right?
Exactly. Or as I've often said, make sure that you make things right in life so that you don't need a medium to do it once they've crossed over. Can people hear your podcast? How often is it on? Where can they find it? Or your show? When is it?
Yeah, well, just it's on iTunes. It's on WGN Plus, and I record it once a week. So, you know, there's a bunch in there already. You know, we've had people who've had near-death experiences. We've had psychics. We've had mediums. You can go to my website, jenweigel.com, and, you know, all the links to my audiobooks, my regular books, my podcast, it's all there, the blog. So book tour stuff. So hopefully people can find information there. And I love hearing from listeners and readers. I'm sure you're probably the same way, Dave. But you want to hear these stories because it helps you compile your data and you know, just continue the dialogue. So it's really important to keep these stories going. I'm a storyteller. It's just the venue changes, right? Sometimes it's on stage. Sometimes it's on radio. Sometimes it's in a book. And that's what you are, too. You're a storyteller. So we have to keep telling our stories and sharing the good ones.
Well, congratulations on all your success, and I hope that we can have you back on the show again soon. Psychics, Healers, and Mediums, A Journalist, A Road Trip, and Voices from the Other Side. That's the book. And remember, if you're going to go buy it through Amazon.com, do us a favor. Make sure that you visit the Podcast One page. Click on the Killer Deals link. And then scroll down to the Beyond the Darkness banner, click on it, and then all of the Amazon links are there. Use any of those Amazon links, and every purchase you make, whether it's the books you hear on the show, movies, clothes, food, anything you need, a small portion goes back to your pals here at Beyond the Darkness to help defray all of our administrative costs and streaming costs. So make sure you make those purchases. Again, if it's $20 on Amazon, it's $20 through this link. Nothing gets taken away from the people selling. It's just a small stipend that goes to help keep the show on the air in exchange for us letting you know about it. That's it for this evening. We'll be back again tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.